My husband is dead a year now, dead since the 14th of March 2009. So I lit him a candle, then I let it burn, because that's what you do with a Yahrzeit candle. You let it burn and burn until finally it burns itself out. Not that mine was a real Yahrzeit candle. Mine was simply a long-burning candle from the new gift store in Dorchester. It won't last. The gift store, I mean, filled as it is with overpriced knick-knacks, my faux Yahrzeit candle included. It was the first time I had left a candle to burn all night. As a child, I had witnessed my mother do it. Every year, she would light a candle on the anniversary of my grandmother's death. She would light it in the evening, and she would leave it while we slept. And never once did the house burn down. It never even crossed my mind that it might. Then I had absolute confidence in the way of the world. Then I knew for certain that each year our Yahrzeit candle would simply burn all night and all day, and then it would stop. Afterwards, when everything around me had burnt away and everyone I had known was gone, I did not light a candle. Not for any of them. I had people to mourn, that was true enough, but I didn't know when exactly they had died. And if I did not know that, how could I light a Yahrzeit candle on the anniversary of their passing? Instead, I determined to leave it all behind me, all the dead, all the misery, all the loss. I would make of myself something new, someone new. As luck would have it, my husband came at exactly the time I needed him, bringing with him the disguise I required to become the woman I was not. But now he is gone, 1 year gone, and still the sadness lingers. This has surprised me. In this long life of mine, there has been sadness such that it might have engulfed me had I let it. But I never did. I never let the sadness smother me. So why can I not shake it now? Why will it not leave me now? The answer comes in the small hours of the night, the candle burning beside me. With my husband gone, I no longer have the strength to resist that push inside me, that urgent press from the girl who had once been me and who was calling once again to be seen. Hannah is the name my parents gave me. The Germans added Sarah. Liederowar was mine by birth. Afterwards, I got rid of them, the whole lot. I discarded all those names and I started again. My husband handed me a new surname, the given name I came to myself. And in this way, I disappeared. In this way, Hannah Sarah Liederowar was no more. And I was happy about that. When I was still Hannah, I lived most of my life in Prague. It was a life of good fortune, and I was a fortunate girl, even if I didn't know it at the time. I was the only child of parents who doted on me. By the time I announced my appearance, my mother was almost 40 and had despaired of ever having a child. And her delight, when finally I arrived, was, I am told, beyond measure. My father was a dentist. Dentists are never loved the way doctors are loved, but perhaps they should be. Many were the patients who presented to my father in agony, only to leave the surgery, if not with a smile on their face, then at least with relief in their eyes. For his patients, my father would always make himself available. For my mother and me, he was everything. Without descending to sycophanty, I have never been a fan of this, my father was an exceptional man, an exceptional person. Dentistry was his vocation, but music was his great love. And I was raised to be musical, and so musical I was. It was from my mother that I learned how to hold myself. If you stand tall, she would tell me, people would think you confident. And if people think you confident, they will believe there is a reason for it. And whatever they believe that reason to be, intelligence, wit, beauty, they will think you have it, simply by the way you stand. Throughout my life, this is exactly how it has been. I have stood tall, even when I felt small and frightened. Even when all my confidence was gone, still I stood tall. And now, when my contemporaries hunch over in a stereotype of the aging process, still I stand tall. I am proud of this. And why not? I have reached an age where there is less to look forward to, fewer markers of success. So why not be proud of standing straight? Surely I shouldn't be denied this opportunity. Ha! Listen to me with my whining, my declaration of the right to stand tall. Then again, why not? In a world obsessed by a right for this and a right for that. Such a nonsense. But there you have it. My father's gentle surgery was attached to the front of our white, thick-walled house, but not accessible to it. While my father administered to his patients, at all hours of the day, my mother managed the surgery. Meanwhile, I was raised by my nanny, Ada. Ada was cheery and energetic and kind, and she ran our household, first as nanny, and then when I was too old for that, as housekeeper, until we were ejected from the house and the surgery, until we were forced to leave everything, even Ada. What happened to her? I don't know. I never found out. Nothing much, in all probability, for she was not Jewish. She was not like us. Jewish? Yes, Jewish. Well, yes and no. For Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, you might find our family in the synagogue. Never more regularly than that. And we ate whatever we liked. On New Year's Eve, we had pork and lentils for good luck. My father was partial to shellfish. It would be a mistake to say we kept kosher. All this to say one thing. Yes, we were Jewish, and no, we were not Jewish. We were Czech, simply Czech. But only until 1939. Yes, yes, yes. Everyone knows the significance of the year. Or perhaps not everyone, perhaps not the young ones for whom this is now too far away to contemplate. 1939, the year after we were thrown to the wolves. The year after that apologist Chamberlain decided the Czechs were expendable and Hitler was welcome to our land. And when, sure enough, Hitler and his men took over all of it, what did we do? With the rest of the world, we looked on. I did too, I admit it. I didn't scream and yell and throw myself under the tanks that rolled into Prague. Rolled in on the wrong side of the road, I might add. German skill at its best. Invade the country and change the direction of the traffic. All in one move. In a bloated Third Reich, there was no place for left-hand traffic. Conformity is the enemy of dissidents and the friend of efficiency. And the Germans have always been an efficient bunch, haven't they? But hush with this. Hush. For though the Nazis were German, the Germans were not necessarily Nazis. So they should not be lumped together. Although I confess that sometimes I still do, even now. When, for example, I see a German car, still I have to fight the urge to grab something sharp, a knife or a screwdriver, so I can scratch down the side, the front, the back of it. No matter the brand, no matter whether it is a Mercedes-Benz, an Audi, a BMW, or that ludicrously named people's car, the Volkswagen.